I think we're going to get as far as right to the threshold of the Chaturshloki verses. We're not going to get there today. But we'll get as far as what Prabhupada calls the prelude. And this is the pre-prelude. So, what were the main... What's the storyline in first, then the main points that we discussed yesterday? Day before we had... We were hearing from Shukadeva Goswami about the Vaikuntha realm of the Supreme Lord being exhibited before Lord Brahma. So really succinctly, what was the rest of the storyline we heard yesterday? More details about what Lord Brahma saw? Oh, go ahead.
Lord Brahma saw the different material manifestations of the Supreme Lord, which are actually the material energies, the Prakriti.
He didn't see the material manifestation. This is the material manifestation. What did he see? Personified energies.
The personified energies. The Supreme Lord, he touched Lord Brahma because he was carrying out the purpose of the Lord, the purpose of the material creation for reclaiming the conditioned souls. And the Lord is very much pleased with him, pleased with the penances that Lord Brahma had performed in order to actually serve the mission of the Lord. So, and Lord Brahma was fixed in a determination to actually fulfill the plan of the Lord. And so Lord Brahma got not only the intelligence to perform his service of...
Well, first he offered him... When the Lord spoke, what's the first thing the Lord said? Did we get that far? Yesterday? What did he say? Does anybody remember what he said? What did he say?
The Lord said that I am not at all pleased by Kuta Yogina, that those who are pseudo yogis, they can never please me, but I am very pleased with you because of your penances and sincere penances.
And therefore, since I am the source of everything, you can ask whatever you like. And then what else did he say? You don't remember. He said, actually you've achieved the highest thing there is to achieve. What is that highest thing that there is to achieve?
Relationship.
Yeah. He says specifically, in that relationship, personally experiencing the Lord's presence directly. And Brahma's just getting ready to reply. I think that's where we concluded. Yeah. Still, the Lord has something more to speak as today. Where we ended up is, you may request a benediction as you like. So, we talked further about deceptive and non-deceptive penances. Someone can remember some of that discussion.
Mentioned that Kuta yogis, their penances are deceptive. So persons who do penances for some material gain or for destruction of others, these are respawned in the category of deceptive penances.
And then the contrast of non-deceptive penance?
Penances just performed for self-realization.
Right. And then we've been discussing consistently, but along with the, so that the primary reward of the Lord or reciprocation of the Lord is his personal disclosure of himself and his relationship, in this case, the relationship of friendship, Sakya Ras. The Lord extended his hand and shook Brahma's hand. Must have been amazed. So, there are other things that we've been speaking about that was previous. But now, theoretically, those different things were discussed. Now we're going to hear them and read about them, practically speaking. Okay. We talked about the purpose of creation. What was that topic? Apart from serving the Lord. Okay, and from the Lord's side, and therefore also from Brahma's side, it's very important. Brahma had a sense of the Lord's purpose of creation, which is what he wanted to fulfill. So, not just to give a facility for fulfilling material desires, but there's another purpose and a higher purpose and a more essential purpose. Yes? To give an opportunity to? Yeah, to get liberation, to go back to Godhead. And in order for that to happen, for living entities who are Nitya Badha to get liberation, go back to Godhead, what has to be done? What's the practical service that has to be done? Two things.
First is the material world has to be created.
Yeah.
And the second is the dissemination of Vedic knowledge.
Dissemination of knowledge. Very good. So, specifically, the material has to be, material world has to be systematically created, that adjective is used, or adverb is used, systematically created. And dissemination of knowledge. Any other main points that one can think of? I believe we spoke a little bit about faith, nature of transcendental faith. Does anyone recall that discussion? Transcendental faith, yes.
By faithful executing the instructions with faith and in knowledge, the faith increases.
That's how faith increases. What is a definition of transcendental faith? Yeah. Okay. So now say it in English. Summarize it. Explain it in English.
Faith means to coming to the conclusion that just by doing this one thing, all perfection will be achieved.
Okay.
And that affection, that the one thing is execution of devotional service.
Okay.
And in our case, you are mentioning that just by dedicating ourselves to chanting, everything desirable will come.
Well, because all services that we do rest upon chanting, and the purity that comes from chanting, the purity that comes from offenseless chanting, and so that's our, as Brahma had his penance, that's our penance. And Brahma had his service that was systematically creating the universe and disseminating transcendental knowledge. So we also have our particular service, which isn't creating universes, but creating something. That's some of the small part of the universe that's to be applied in principle and in practice towards the end of serving the mission of the Lord and also disseminating transcendental knowledge, which means we have to hear it from the right source so then we can receive it and then disseminate it. So having faith, transcendental faith, is like, so Brahma's was, if I just do this one thing, I'll just follow this instruction of tapa tapa and chant this mantra that I receive from the Lord within the heart, and everything that I require will come from that. So likewise in our case, we're hearing chant and we're receiving the mantra. If we have implicit faith in that instruction, then how attentively we will work towards that. And then just one last thing, that verse from the Lord Brahma's prayers, Jnane Prayasam Vudapashyana Manta Eva. So what was that? What does that mean? What's the relevance of that verse to this discussion? Jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane stitakshruti katam tanavan manogir. What does that mean? How does it apply to this discussion? Yes.
Sir, you said that one need not have to take to the renounced order of life in order to get the highest perfection in life. And just by giving up the mental speculation, without the mental speculation,
and
engaging in the regulative duty that one is designed to, and following the, and singing of the glories of the Supreme Lord, one will gain the favor and mercy of the Lord.
What will happen?
One will get the mercy.
Mercy, right.
Mercy.
Sympathy and mercy of the unconquerable, and
Ajita, who is the Supreme Lord, is Ajita, can be conquered.
He will be conquered. Okay. And so that's the meaning of the verse. And how does that apply to this discussion about Lord Brahma? And how does it apply to ourselves in the context of the discussion? Does it apply? Yeah, sure. How does it apply?
In our case, like, we have to follow the...
First with Brahma. How does it apply? How does it apply?
Brahma simply accepted the process of tapa.
I'll give you a clue. The whole purport is discussing Paramahamsa. Yat Paramahamsyena Patadi Gamyate. So Prabhupada, the whole purport is discussing meaning of Paramahamsa and the application. So in Brahma's case,
Brahma, he performed devotional service without any malice.
Yeah, he sure did. Eventually he, did that. Go ahead. That's not the main point of this circumstance here. Prabhupada is speaking of Brahma as a Paramahansa. So, what's a Paramahansa not? Or who is someone who is not a Paramahansa?
So
someone who may have...
He has a desire to become one with the Lord of God.
Yeah.
He has a desire to enjoy the kingdom of God.
Lots and lots of knowledge, lots and lots of material wealth, lots and lots of mystic powers, lots and lots. That's not Paramahansa. Brahma is a Paramahansa because... So Brahma fits this position because he had a particular urge for material activity, which he wanted to fulfill for the Lord's purpose, and he became a Paramahansa by that same method that Lord Brahma is speaking about in that prayer to Lord Krishna. Stane Stataki stayed in his position. He didn't abandon that inclination to perform some particular material type of work. He stayed in his position, but he did engage in devotional service. He met these qualifications. And so the Lord showed him his mercy and his sympathy and submitted himself. Take from me whatever you like. The application in our case is this isn't just meant for Lord Brahma, it's meant for us too. This isn't important. It's going to come up again. But we are meant not just to marvel at Lord Brahma and then get back to our material business with no change, but to understand from his example how this Paramahansa stage, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for Paramahansas. Can anybody remember the verse or the section from the early part of the first canto that indicates this? Yeah. Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. It's right at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. Nirmatsara. Those that aren't materially entangled, they're Satam. They're situated in Sat. Parama. Sat. They're the Paramahansa. This literature is for the Paramahansas. So, are we Paramahansas? We're in training. That's what we're in training for. We're undergoing some our training sessions here. And how well we apply, how well we hear, how well we accept, how well we apply will determine how far we get with that. Okay. So, continuing. The last verse that we covered was text 21, where Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan is instructing Brahma to accept a benediction because you please me very much. I wish you well. You received my favor. You may know it that you've already received the ultimate benediction. Then he repeats, the highest perfectional ingenuity. Ingenuity. Now, ingenuity. What's ingenuity mean? When we think of someone who has ingenuity, what's that? I didn't look it up in a dictionary. Prabhupada says in the purport at the very end, this word is very significant. So, you know, when you have like a problem to solve and you receive inspiration and you solve the problem, that's ingenuity. When you get stumped and you can't figure it out, that's lacking ingenuity. So it's kind of like a creative problem solving is ingenuity. That's the normal sense of ingenuity. So the emphasis, the perfection, the highest perfectional ingenuity is the personal perception of my abodes. And this has been possible because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance according to my order. So if you want to have the highest perfectional ingenuity capacity, according to the Supreme Lord, just do what Brahma did. Have a submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance. Back to this. Have transcendental faith in the process, starting with chanting. Then you get the most creative way of problem solving, and that is seeing the Supreme Lord. Then you can just ask him. And for that matter, you don't have to ask him because the problem was already solved. That's ingenuity. That takes transcendental faith. Okay. So, three times in the purport, and that means it's for absolute emphasis, Prabhupada says the same thing. And I'll read the three sentences. It comes right at the very beginning of the purport of text 22. The highest perfectional stage of life is to know the Lord by actual perception, by the grace of the Lord. Then about three quarters of the way down. Thus, he attained the highest perfectional stage of experiencing the boat of the Lord and the Lord himself with all his paraphernalia. And the last sentence in the purport, first and last. The Lord says that the highest perfectional stage of learning is to know him and his abode devoid of all illusion. So, that's not taught in the university here. But our great transcendental acharyas, they're teaching that. And this instruction by Lord Vishnu is to indicate that's a fact. So, and the means that qualify one to receive that is sincere attitude in the performance of severe penance. And again, Prabhupada is emphasizing in the purport, this can be attained by everyone. It's not a special club. Or only souls who are very, 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 have a special birth, something special, special, and that's not us. That's not the Bhagavatam's message. Anyone, everyone, eligible. If we're willing to discharge the act of devotional service to the Lord as enjoined in revealed scriptures that are standard and accepted. And then Prabhupada becomes very strong, even stern, saying, Bhagavad Gita, it's been accepted by great acharyas, list the acharyas. It's very simple. Mamana bhava mad bhakto. It says it right in Bhagavad Gita. It should be accepted. Or Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam, he doesn't give the Sanskrit, just paraphrases. Abandon all other dharmas, just surrender to me. Krishna says it. What does these things? Then there's their eligibility. These are the, so then the Lord gives us all protection to his surrendered soul. These are the secrets of attaining the highest perfectional stage. Lord Brahma exactly followed these principles. Then he uses some language that's not common for Prabhupada, without any superiority complex, because that's like a modern term. Someone has a superiority complex. It's a common way or conventional way of saying acting through false ego. He's not acting through false ego. False ego is, I think I'm better than everybody. That's superiority complex. No false ego. That's this non-deceptive penance, or it's connected to the sense of transcendental humility, where the conception of separateness from the Supreme Lord, my power, my capacity, my intelligence, my whatever I have, it's mine, this I and mine, not there. That's having it as the superiority complex. It's a nice way to remember this statement, connected to the word manishita or ingenuity. Manishitanu bhavoyam. Highest perfectional ingenuity, problem solving. Next time you have a problem, remember this verse. Okay. So there's two more verses where Lord Vishnu speaks to Brahma. And Brahma's, so he's giving Brahma some clues about his existence and some clues about the service that Brahma has to do for him. Here's what he says. He's going to glorify something further about this non-deceptive penance. It's a key, like a pivotal point in this dialogue. So, O sinless Brahma, being sinless is also very important. You may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance when you were perplexed in your duty. Confirmed. Brahma accepted that. Now he's directly confirming that. He had full faith. He had no doubt anyways. Now it's being confirmed. Such penance is my heart and soul. And therefore penance and I are non-different. That's pretty high glorification. And in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that penance is the internal potency of the Lord. Say it the other way around. The internal potency of the Lord is penance. Now, penance carries with it a connotation, and that is, it hurts. It's painful. Right? Oh, penance. But for Brahma, or for a devotee who is situated in the internal potency of the Lord, no problem. Like, very classic one, is the description of Mother Jasoda's churning butter. So it's very hot, and she's churning and churning in the heat. Does she think, oh, this is what a penance, this is painful? Not at all. She's so happy. Beads of sweat are pouring down her forehead. The hair, the flowers from her hair are falling as the bangles on her arms are jingling. And she's just singing songs, spontaneous songs, speaking of singing of Krishna's pastimes and his beautiful features, and Krishna this and Krishna did that, and Krishna's friends this and Krishna Krishna. She's just carried away in ecstasy. But it's penance. And there isn't anything else. Ask Mother Jasoda, would you like to let somebody else churn that butter for a while? Oh no. No, thank you. She's very happy. So or anyone doing some service for the Hanuman, do you like someone else to carry those boulders for you that must be very heavy, making the bridge to Lanka? No way. Transcendental penance. The internal potency. So then Prabhupada presents some things that are, he goes to the material side and then goes to the spiritual side. So in the material side, there is a cause and effect. There is propensity for overlordship, and the effect is material bondage. That's the problem. Cause is propensity for overlordship, and the effect is material bondage. Just the opposite of what we want. That's the trick of Maya. I'm in control. Oh, no, you're not. You're under arrest. Bondage. Wait a minute. I thought I was going to enjoy. Be quiet. You're coming with me. So, and what's the remedy? Engaging in devotional service of the Lord, this non-deceptive penance. And from that comes knowledge, which Brahma is going to receive in just a moment. And from that knowledge comes detachment. So Prabhupada essentially here is paraphrasing one verse from the first canto that describes the rendering of devotional service unto the personality of Godhead causally produces knowledge and detachment. Somebody knows what that verse is? Okay. These things, they're knowledge, detachment, they're a manifestation of the potency of the Lord. Prabhupada explains this. They follow behind this non-deceptive penance. Causelessly, they accompany, because that Krishna's, or Lord Vishnu is saying here, that penance is me. And in the purport it's clarified, that is his internal potency. Because the Lord's internal potency and the Lord are none different. It's bhakti, the linking between the Lord and himself is through that internal potency. Knowledge comes, detachment comes. Now, back to the overlordship propensity and material, resulting in material bondage. Prabhupada, the next second paragraph, he makes it very clear, the two things don't mix. one cannot enjoy material illusory prosperity and be situated in the internal potency at the same time. And I don't recall if I I think I expressed this here. It's a very nice discussion when Lord Krishna is telling Yogamaya to transfer Balaram to the womb of Rohini, and then you appear as the daughter of Mother Yasoda, I'll appear as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, and we're brother and sister. And then you'll be transferred over over here. When it comes, tries to kill you, he won't be able to do that. And then you'll disperse yourself all over the place, and you'll be known by so many different names, and persons will worship you for material benefit. You're speaking to Yogamaya, and then all of a sudden she becomes not Yogamaya. And the explanation is, those who see the potency of the Lord as object for material enjoyment, they will then see face to face Maya, Mahamaya. However, the same paraphernalia, the same manifestations seen as paraphernalia for worship of the Lord, that's Yoga Maya. But if it was just as simple as making an intellectual adjustment, then a lot of people could be situated in the internal potency. But it requires more than an intellectual adjustment. It requires non-deceptive penance, which means the instructions that we hear from Krishna and the instructions that we hear from the representative of Krishna, hearing it, accepting it, executing it, then we're eligible for the Yogamaya potency instead of Mahamaya potency. In other words, it reduces and eventually eradicates the propensity for overlordship or the propensity for material enjoyments. So, be warned, this properly executed devotional service will take away your propensity for material enjoyment. Beware. Just like Rupa Goswami offers one very wonderful prayer. My dear friend, if you at all want to enjoy family life and the comforts of family life, then please don't go down to the bank of the river Jamuna by Keshigat, because there you'll find one boy and he's so charming he'll steal your heart away and you'll give up this business of material enjoyment. Don't go there. I warn you. Rupa Goswami. So here it's being presented by Lord Vishnu to Brahma, same idea. So now there's two, in this purport there's two therefores. Two summary sentences. One is at the end of the second, and the other is the end of the third paragraph. The one at the end of the second paragraph, therefore, penance and devotional service of the Lord, either by voluntary submission or by being forced by the Lord, is necessary for attaining perfection, and thus such penance is the internal potency of the Lord. Such penance is the internal potency of the Lord. That's the voluntary kind. Because the voluntary kind, voluntary means I choose willfully, I'm making a conscious choice. I choose to accept this position of simplicity, austerity, and penance, namely, absorb myself in these activities of devotion regularly, consistently, again and again, for a sustained time. Then Prabhupada explains that that's the internal potency. We then, by that dedication, that commitment, we leave the external potency and enter the internal potency. That is the internal potency. It's non-different from Krishna. It's the agency of linking us with Krishna up to the point in purified state of the perfection, the highest perfectional ingenuity, seeing Krishna. and in the restored state of our relationship with him. So there's one other therefore sentence, and this has to do with the very we're at the beginning here of sinless, O sinless Brahma. It's the last word in the Sanskrit, anhagam, anagha. So one can try to be engaged in devotional service of the Lord, but one has to be free from sins in so doing. What is the verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says the same thing? Yesham. Okay. So that Dridhavrata, Pajante Mam Dridhavrata, that's like same notion of non-deceptive penance, right? Undeviated, non-deceptive, undeviated in earnestness means nothing can distract me. Dridhavrata. So a precursor for that is that one is freed from sinful activities. You can't mix the two. You can't mix propensity for material enjoyment, and you can't mix sinful activity. But what, here's the therefore sentence. Therefore, only love and penance combined can please the Lord, and thus one is able to attain his complete mercy. He directs the sinless, and the sinless devotee attains the highest perfection of life. It's really nice. The whole thing is being laid out for us. All we just have to do is open our eyes and follow it. Very nice. Okay, so then the last statement by Lord Vishnu, he again is glorifying this non-deceptive penance. He says, I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. And Brahma, you've achieved it. And all the rest of the readers of Bhagavatam are meant to also achieve it. So the emphasis in the purport is that hearing from the Lord or hearing from the spiritual master in disciplic succession, this is how we receive the order. And then the mandate is to execute that order, however painstakingly. This is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. So he's not itemized them 1, 2, 3, but he's saying it again. Same as we discussed yesterday morning. Hearing from the proper source, accepting it in an absolute manner, and carrying it out accordingly. Regardless of any obstacle, regardless of distraction, nothing will dissuade me from executing this indication. This is the internal potency. And certainly one will reach this position of receiving the mercy of the Lord without a doubt. Very nice. So now Brahma speaks. Brahma's been asked, take a benediction even though you already have the best thing. And I mentioned Brahma's very expert. He asks for two things. Basically what he's asking for is knowledge and protection. And the protection specifically is protection from false ego. So question was raised yesterday, is it okay to pray for removal of obstacles? Here's Brahma doing it. One obstacle is not having sufficient knowledge to understand how to carry out one's duties, and the other is, in the execution of my duties, I may mistakenly fall prey to the sense of doership, acting through false ego, kartahamiti manyate. So an obstacle is my own false ego. So I pray, Brahma prays for protection. And of course Lord Vishnu agrees to that protection, and he has to, at a later point in time, fulfill his promise. Brahma gets a little proud, and he has to protect him. He does protect him, and Brahma gets straightened out. But it's directly the internal potency of the Lord. So Brahma says, text 25, O personality of Godhead, you are situated in every living entity's heart as the Supreme Director, and therefore you are aware of all endeavors by your superior intelligence without any hindrance whatsoever. So you know me, and you know everything, and so I would like you to share some of that knowledge, specific knowledge, with me, and that's my request. So here's then he asks four questions, and we're going to jump ahead to the purport of text 31, if you have a book. And Prabhupada very kindly itemizes for us the four questions, which are answered by the Chaturasloki, the four answers. So here's the four questions. Text 31, purport. These were Brahma's questions. One, what are the forms of the Lord both in matter and in transcendence? Two, how are the different energies of the Lord working? Three, how does the Lord play with his different energies? And four, how may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? Now, they may kind of blur in our mind right now just hearing them, but they'll become distinct as we go along. So the first one is the form of the Lord in matter and transcendence. Here's how Brahma asks the question. Text 26, now we're back. The question. In spite of that, my Lord, so in spite of what? You're in the heart of everyone, you're omniscient, you know everything. Everyone's endeavors you're aware of, you have superior intelligence, you're not hindered by anything whatsoever, but in spite of that, I'm praying that you will kindly fulfill my desire. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all? This is a common theological question. The impersonalists answer it one way. It's easy. There is no such thing as a mundane form. It doesn't exist. Asat. And for that matter, the spiritual form, it also doesn't exist. That's not Srimad Bhagavatam. But well, how does it work then? How, like this question of that is the body of Brahma, since it comes directly from the spiritual body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is it not also spiritual? Because if it's not also spiritual, how does something material come from something spiritual? That's where the impersonalists have a glitch. Well, it can't. It can't. Therefore, it isn't. But, you know, I bang my head and there, so then that from which this comes is also isn't. convenient, but it's wrong. But how does it work? That's what Brahma wants to know. The forms of the Lord in transcendence, the form of the Lord in matter. That's the first question. Second question. Text 27. And please inform me how you, by your own self, manifest different energies for annihilation, generation, acceptance, and maintenance by combination and permutation. Whoa. Upa Brimhita. Sanskrit. Nana Shakti Upa Brimhita. By combination and permutation. So this is like the, in Bhagavad Gita, the sadvikarams, the transformations. You know that from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Tadvikarang, so that Krishna is listing, Arjuna's asking what's matter, what's the field and the knower of the field. Krishna says this body is the field, and one who knows the body is the knower of the field, and there's two knowers of, there's one who knows all fields, that's me, that's the Supreme. Then he goes back again and describes the field of activities and says this, all these different energies and their permutations and combinations, or their, the transformations of them. The transformations includes emotions, feelings about that light or the heat or the sound or the wind or the best person, or it's subtle. It's subtle material. It's not that being spiritual means I just have good feelings about everybody and everything, and that's being spiritual. That's also material. It's one of the permutations and combinations. Upabrimita is the word here, and Tadvikarangs is in the Bhagavad Gita. Essentially the same idea. So, Brahma's question is, can you inform me how your different energies manifest everything? Or, now in the purport of text 31, how are the different energies of the Lord working? In the purport, Prabhupada indicates, without using the term, the Chintabheda-Bheda philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. He's asking, can you explain the Chintabheda-Bheda Tattva philosophy of Lord Chaitanya? Without saying it that way. How does your energy, through different manifestations, combinations, and transformations, how does it do everything? How does it work? Tell me. He needs to know, because he's got to do it on the Lord's behalf. So it's like, you know, you have to be the engineer for rebuilding the World Trade Tower or something. You're going to have, even just building one of these things, you're going to have certain knowledge of how this goes with that, and how does it go together, not just here's the pile of bricks and cement. The supervisor that knows the ins and the outs of the thing, not just how much water to put in with the cement and how to lay the bricks to make it go straight instead of tilted. How does this whole thing work? Brahma has to do it. He needs to know the answer. He needs to understand the Chintabheda-Bheda Tattva philosophy. How is the Lord working with his different energies? So now, what's your different feature of forms, both in matter and spirit? How do you make things happen according to your different energies? Third question. O Master of all energies, please tell me philosophically about all of them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. He's making a statement, but it's presenting in the form of a question. How do you enter into that creation which you've, through your energies and the transformations and permutations and combinations of those energies, you've brought it into being? Describe how you do it. You come here and you're completely spiritual, you come to this place that is material. Describe the Leela manifestations within this world. How do you do it? Remember, he's the chief engineer. He's got put another book on his shelf, and his service. In the end of the paragraph, or the end of the purport, Prabhupada writes, "By the grace of the Lord, a devotee like Brahma, or one in his chain of disciplic succession, can understand the Almighty Personality of Godhead eternally engaged in his transcendental pastimes in the region of different energies," like this one. How do you do it? You with the metaphor of the spider. From his body, the spider produces the saliva, or the, which becomes the web. And he spins the web and he crawls around on the web. Then when he wants, he can withdraw the web back into his body. So like that, like the spider, how do you do it? Third question. And then the fourth question, here's how it's stated. "Please tell me so that I may be taught in the matter by the instruction of the Personality of Godhead, and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities." So back to purport of 31. How may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? How am I supposed to do this? Because everything is being conducted by you, but I have some service to do. So how am I to carry out my service, especially in such a way that I don't become conditioned by the activity itself? And fall into Maya, that is, thinking myself separate from you, while I'm trying to serve you. How can I carry out my duty in Krishna consciousness? Four questions. Chatusloki is an answer to those four questions. Two more verses and we're done for this morning. Text 30. Brahma says, "O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend," parentheses, "as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the supreme." Watch out for pride. Prabhupada said many times, even a pauper is proud of his penny. Even a small fry is proud of whatever little small fry thing they can do, because it's part of the material disease, is pride. So his first, he was given a benediction, so please give me knowledge and please give me protection from pride. So In the purport, Prabhupada speaks about rasa. There are different five primary rasas. Every living entity has one of those five. This particular Brahma had the rasa of friendship, but although it was friendship, it was non-equal friendship. Very clearly, the Lord was the superior and he was the inferior, but friendship, rasa. And Brahma had some opulence, but what was his opulence compared to the source of all opulence? It was nothing. But part of pride is we have to eclipse the supreme opulence person and get it all puffed up thinking this little puny opulence I have, how big it is. So then Prabhupada gives examples of great devotees who had some opulence but didn't become subject to that. Hanuman Ji had great strength and so many powers, but he never deviated from the position of serving the Lord. He gives example of Brahma, although eternally related with the Lord, in friendship of humor, excuse me, the humor of friendship, and although entrusted with the most exalted post of creating different grades of living entities, he remained conscious of his position. It's the Lord who is supremely powerful, not me. I'm a servant. So then, Prabhupada explains the first snare of Maya is wanting to be the enjoyer of these little puny opulences. And then when we get frustrated with that, well, I want to be the supreme philosophically. I'll just put he was supreme philosophically out of existence. And then that leaves room for me. I can be supreme. So that's deceptive. And it's nice, Prabhupada, in the second paragraph, Prabhupada writes, factually, Lord Brahma does not create the living entities. In the beginning of the creation, he is empowered to give different bodily shapes to the living entities according to their work during the last millennium. Brahma's duty is just to wake the living entities from their slumber and engage them in their proper duty. The different grades of living entities are not created by Brahmaji, by his capricious whims, but he is entrusted with the task of giving the living entities different grades of body so that they can work accordingly. And still, he is conscious that he is only the instrument so that he may not think of himself as the supreme powerful Lord. Well, maybe I'll, because the next verse, well, 31, the Lord gives his first response. I'll read it. This is an often quoted verse. If you're going to memorize some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a nice one to memorize. Gyanam paramaguyam ne yad vigyanam samanditam sarahasyam tad angam cha grahana gaditam maya grahana. Just try to take it up. And sarahasyam in sa rahasyam, in the word for word, it's with devotional service. And Prabhupada says in the purport, rahasyam means devotional service. And in the purport, he uses the word mystery three times. And in upcoming purports, it comes about another eight or nine times. This is the this word becomes a theme in the Chaturasloki, sarahasyam, because it's clearly stated, yet it remains a mystery. What is that mystery? Devotional service. Devotional service discloses Krishna, and the absence of devotional service, everything. All of this is just mysterious. What's going on here? So, speculators, they'll speculate. Nothing's going on. Or this or that is going on, but you know, they won't understand without devotional service. So it's in the internal potency, naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrata, it conceals from those that aren't ready or in a humble state of mind, ready to take up the non-deceptive penance of bhakti yoga. So, in the purport, these four questions are identified. Prabhupada is making it like, you know, elementary school for us, so we can, so simple, we can understand it, no problem. The Lord says that Brahma may take the answers as he explains them. That's what he's saying here. I'm going to explain it to you, and because you have this capacity, due to your non-deceptive penance, you will understand it, because you'll just take it as I present it to you. You'll take it as it is, and your heart is free, sinless. Yesham pandikatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha. You're beyond duality, and you'll be able to take up your service. Ajante mam ridavrata. So I'm going to explain all this to you. So parama guyam me guyam. It's very confidential. The ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the most confidential. Same parama guyam. This is it. Most confidential knowledge. What is that? Devotional service. And this is how we can render devotional service, by understanding these four things, and that's why it's the Chatur Sloki verses. Because the message overall in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is the personality of Godhead and is realized by devotional service. So all of this is like detailed, high science. Spiritual technology for those that want to do some important service like Brahma wants to do. One can just chant Hare Krishna and be happy, but those that have these intellects that kind of, it's like a gift and a burden at the same time. You gotta use it. Because otherwise it'll go off in other kinds of yucky things, speculative things, and pull you down things. So, you gotta use it. You got it. You gotta use it. So, there's this high technology here. The qualification for knowing the mystery of the personality of God, it is devotional service, and by the same principle of hearing from the right source, accepting it because one's heart is pure and recognizes it as absolute, and then implementing it in the form of practical activity. Just in conclusion, in this purport of 31, very important, Sarahasyam Chaguyame. Sarahasyam tad angam cha, excuse me. The angam means the paraphernalia. So it's not just the activities of devotion, but the paraphernalia for devotional service. We have to know, we have to see it properly and use it properly. So, Prabhupada speaks in the purport about vidhi bhakti, practicing by a neophyte, with our present senses and present contaminated circumstance of our senses, but still because there's this internal potency at work, because we're, to whatever degree we are, submissive to the authority of Scripture and Guru and Krishna, we get purified. It's all made possible by the hearing process. Such hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord can be made possible in the association of devotees only. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended 5 main principles for attaining perfection in devotional service of the Lord. He's presenting them in a slightly doctored up way. The first is association with devotees, parentheses, hearing. The second is chanting the glories of the Lord. Third, hearing. Emphasis on hearing and chanting. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the pure devotee. Fourth, residing in a holy place connected with the Lord. Fifth, worshipping the deity of the Lord with devotion. Such rules and regulations are parts of devotional service. So, as requested by Lord Brahma, the Personality of Godhead will explain all about the 4 questions put forward by Lord Brahma and others, which are parts and parcels of the same question. So we're in the position ready to hear the Lord's answers. Stay tuned tomorrow morning. Okay, so any discussion?
What is the connection to voluntary parents for devotion?
Yeah.
Like you're mentioning that sometimes the Lord forces our penance. What does that mean?
Sometimes the Lord does what?
Forces.
Forces. Involuntary penance.
I couldn't get that particular
sentence. Involuntary penance? Hari. With thousands of hands, he takes everything away. And then one makes a recovery. And with thousands of hands, he takes everything away. One makes a comeback. Thousands of hands, he takes everything. Finally, the Prabhupada goes through that in the purport. But finally, one comes to the realization, I guess the Lord doesn't want me to have these things. Unless one is intelligent enough to recognize right away, this is the Lord's doing, he doesn't want me to have these things. That's involuntary. Involuntary is like we were discussing the other day, just deprivation, right? So rather than being put in jail cell somewhere with involuntary deprivation, which is the material world, like a prison house, rather than trying to upgrade our prison cell from solitary confinement to special privileges but still in jail, better to voluntarily accept penance. So penance does mean without it, so that's considered by some as painful, to just do without unnecessary things. It's a good practice for devotees to, well, I've narrated this story before, but one devotee I know had a propensity to collect things. Nice devotee. He had so much stuff. But once a year, he went through his stuff, one by one, held it up, looked at it, and decided which things he could get rid of, and then just distributed them. Then the things he couldn't bear to get rid of, put them back, and he put them in a locker, or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 lockers, and kept them. But it was an annual thing. He would give things up. A lot of stuff to give up. But it's good. Principle. Besides just being charitable by nature, to review like spring cleaning. I don't know if you have that. It's an American thing. Because after winter, it's, so you may just make everything clean. Just get rid of things. It's a common thing in America. They have called a yard sale or garage sale. People just have so much stuff. They bought it, put out in their yard, and sell it for next to nothing. And other people come around and, oh, here's a good bargain. I've always wanted one of these. They can live without it, but they've always wanted it, so there it is, next to nothing. And they take it home with them, put it, and they do their garage sale later on. Anyway, voluntarily doing without things. And even in the principle of, when following that principle, just regularly discard things, just give things away. To another devotee or to a poor person, or, and just give things away. And one's ongoing program of ownership, well, you know, think twice before you buy something. Well, have the money and it's nice, and do you really need it? I'll wait a month and see if I really need it. And it just evaporates, the need evaporates. Just don't keep those things. Don't buy those things either. Don't accumulate those things. It's something that's really needed, okay. And then you have to maintain it because it's Krishna's property. And when you don't need it anymore, give it away. Or something. Sell it to someone. Or see that. But that's the pratikul, and then the others. Accept those things that are favorable, but both should be driven by dedication to the Supreme. Okay, so anything else?
Yeah? It has been mentioned that devotional service can only be performed when one is completely free for enjoyment of material enjoyment and sin. But it seems to be always seeping in
nothing. Once, I'll tell you a little story. Once, the president of the Bombay Temple, very nice sannyasi, Prabhupada awarded sannyas to Giriraj Maharaj. So Prabhupada, from time to time, would do this. He would ask, in his presence, he would ask the devotees to give class. And Giriraj Maharaj worked very, very hard as the temple president in Bombay. You can imagine just building that place. But he liked to read also. He loves to read. He'll look up 50 different things. I just, you know, go to a book and make a reference. And he's very familiar with Prabhupada's books. So he was giving a lecture. And in the course of the lecture, he was describing an incident. In the course of describing the incident, he said, and then I fell in Maya. Prabhupada interrupted him. And then you fell in Maya. And then you fell in Maya. You're always in Maya. Everybody laughed. So it always seems to seep in. Sense gratification seeps in. Sometimes you're dripping with sense gratification instead of just moist. So, those kinds of statements appear in different ways in the Bhagavatam. Like sometimes it says, and then devotional service begins when it's describing, you know, the Paramahamsa stage of devotional service. But then, that's Uttam Bhakti, and this is the cultivation of Uttam Bhakti. Okay? If not in a stage where there is no sense gratification, then at least in the stage where we're cultivating freedom from that. Okay, I got a little thing. While performing our activities day to day, naturally we think ourselves as the only doer. How to surrender all our works to Krishna and see Him as our maintainer. This relates very much to what Pankaj just asked. In our conditioned state, there's aham and mameti, or aham mama, I and mine. So this is the whole topic, and we have our daily devotional practices. This is our tapo divyam, or this is our transcendental penance, non-deceptive penance. So the answer that I've been giving is the best way to prevent that false sense of doership is very carefully attending to our morning sadhana, and then applying with whatever spiritual strength we've gained from that morning sadhana, applying ourselves in our work, remembering the teachings that we've understood, and simply remembering Krishna. This is Krishna's work. This is an ability given by Krishna. Proof of that is, in a moment, Krishna can take the ability away. I can become paralyzed, or anything. It's borrowed ability. Someone else's ability. It's Krishna's ability. Krishna says, I'm the ability in man. So my position is, I'm the servant, or as Prabhupada is saying here, I'm the instrument, and Krishna is the doer. So we have to be guided by these two things, the spiritual strength that comes from purification of heart through proper sadhana, and in a parallel way by the knowledge that continues to give us direction in our activity. So the answer is, it takes cultivation to surrender our works means dedication of those activities. The surrender our works is the same as in the Sharanagati discussion, Goptritve Varanam Tava. Krishna is our maintainer. The works, what I'm doing is I'm serving Krishna. That's who I am. I'm His servant. What I'm doing is I'm serving Krishna. And the works, that's this, His energies that are working. The Prakriti is doing everything, and I'm just a little spark inside all this energy, desiring to serve Krishna. So the work is, that's Krishna's work. If I'm Krishna's instrument, it's Krishna's work, not my work. And the other question is, there is no difference between, is exactly what's being said here. Penances, Lord Vishnu is saying that penances and myself are non-different, or penances and devotional service. Penances meaning His internal potency. such penance is the internal potency of the Lord and is none different from Him. Is there a difference between performing penances and serving the Lord? No difference. It's His internal potency. And serving the Lord is not different than the Lord. It's our, that connects us to Him. Something else? You sure?
Like to engage in non-deceptive kind of penance, one, we should not make mental adjustments, but we should actually. So this point I wanted to understand.
We should not make mental adjustments. Yeah. Now you want to understand what that means?
Yeah, because what is the symptom, like how we make a mental adjustments in our world? Because this tendency is very obvious. Like in many of our situations, we try to make mental adjustments in our.
Bring the mind to the holy name. My dear mind, please sit down. Pay attention. Don't go. Nah. Right here. Holy name. It's holy name time. Pay attention. And hold the mind there. Practice that. Very serious. I'm not saying it in, I mean, it's in a joking way, but it's not in a joking way. Do that. Steadily, every morning. Every morning. Even do it for one morning and you'll experience, what to speak of, every morning, such relief from this thing that you're speaking about. The mind is then satisfied. The mind wants that and that. How can I avoid intellectualizing while hearing? That's something that pertains to every one of us. Because we do have intellects, and we like to use them. And how to avoid letting it just stop there. I guess it's good to make it clear what intellectualizing means. It's just gathering another bit of information, another piece to the puzzle, and putting that piece of the puzzle in place and feeling some satisfaction. Another piece to the puzzle figured out. And just carry on. No change. So this topic fits our discussion very, very nicely. Remember, Akshay is giving this very answer, for repeating what I had said previously. So that the preliminary thing is actually wanting to become free from intellectualizing. I desire... some relief from this program that's getting me nowhere. I complain about it getting me nowhere, but do I really want to go somewhere? If I really desire, then this hearing process is the effective thing. They're not just intellectually fact-filing in your memory banks, because that's what we're trained up to do. Especially educated people, you're trained up. Take this fact, put it in your file, someone presses the button, you give the fact back. And sometimes you have to mix this fact with that one in a very clever way, and then you get even a better pat on the head. You get rewards for intellectualizing. We're trained up. Apply anything practically, forget it. That's not what it's about. It's about just giving information back. What about character? Don't worry about that. Just give back facts in a clever way. So we have to have a desire to leave aside that program and take up something where I'm actually going to go somewhere. And the hearing that we've been receiving supplies that. So hearing from the same answer, hearing from the right source, accepting. How do I go beyond that? Chant. Can't. But taking it, that's Krishna's answer. Okay, absolutely, that's Krishna's. I can't see him, but that's Krishna's answer. Now what do I chant? Here it is, Maha Mantra. Okay. So then we have to bring our faculties to bear, like this, bring the mind, bring our senses, bring our consciousness, bring all of our faculties to bear on this one activity. It's too simple. And I'm used to such complex, that's okay. Leave your complicated stuff aside for now, just do the simple thing. Practice it anyways. Have faith. This one thing. Okay. And then what will happen is some inspiration to serve Krishna. Then you need direction. Well, serve Krishna what way? Well, that's in these different instructions, how to serve Krishna this way, that way. Then you have the channel to go with that enthusiastic consciousness of connecting with Krishna in day to day, moment to moment. So, as there's this American expression, this separates the men from the boys. You have that expression here too? No. It separates the immature from the mature. Because mature means it's hard. Because my mind is wanting other things, and my senses are wanting other things, and I have all this other conditioning going on. It's okay, never mind that. Stay focused. Okay, I'll stay focused. The one who does that, that's mature. I carry that consciousness with me into the chanting, and I carry that consciousness with me into the day-to-day. Then it's not just intellectualizing. It's not just another book that goes on the shelf. I read that one, what's next? You're interested in applying these understandings. It comes down to a very fundamental thing. I sincerely want to have a relationship with Krishna. I know I have that relationship. The scriptures tell me, but I really want to experience that relationship with Krishna. And I hear that it's accessible 24 hours a day by anybody. So let me get off this intellectual platform business and the mental platform business and the sensual platform. Let me get to the spiritual platform. I'll share something with you that I was requested at one university in Minneapolis, Minnesota, to give a seminar for 6 hours on stress management. And I thought, get it. I'm not going to do that. I thought, that's what they want. So I changed the titles. Stress Management, a Spiritual Approach. And a six-hour seminar. And using PowerPoint and stuff that I got from medical books and web pages and pictures and diagrams, and Harvard Medical School says this, stress management. But it was all, you know, some mundane authorities, but it was a spiritual message. Anyway. So, and they really liked it. And during the course of the class, I got them to chant two rounds on beads. And they bought books, and you know, they heard the message more comfortably than they would have heard it if I just gave the Bhagavad Gita class. So then Anshu heard about that and said, can you do that here at Champaign-Urbana? So I did it at Champaign-Urbana. Smaller number of people, but a similar kind of response. So did it a few other places in colleges. And then I was thinking, the best-selling books today are when the buzzword is spiritual, self-help and spiritual. Number one best-selling books. But they don't know what spiritual is. So I was thinking of preparing something, using their mundane authorities, but really getting them to the real, you know, the course called Getting Spiritual, or How to Spiritualize Your Life, something like that. And one of the things would be to explain the difference between sensual, mental, intellectual, and spiritual. So at least they have a choice, because Prabhupada says in Western philosophy, it's a blur. Mental, intellectual, and spiritual, they make no distinction. Western philosophers don't make a distinction. And that's what's going on today. It's really yucky that the lack of clarity they have of what passes for spiritual. And if we don't speak up and say what it is, it's just going to grow and grow like a mushroom. So, but if we just invite them to a Bhagavad Gita class, they won't come. Some people won't come. But when they experience something genuine, especially when it's packaged recognizably, certain buzzwords, certain ribbons and bows and nice colors and technology and animated things, and ooh. So one of the things I was thinking to do, my other things have been overwhelming me, but while here, actually just before I came, I got from Vikash the disc of all the PowerPoint programs that were prepared for science and nations topics, thinking that maybe some of that could be done for this type of thing. But I just haven't thought it through yet properly. But like, you know, making your relationships spiritual. So you have to define then what is spiritual. Not something that's sensual or feel-good mental or intellectual, but actually spiritual. What's a spiritual relationship? We have the answer in the Bhagavatam. But part of it is to say what it's not before you can say what it is. Spiritual relationships. Meaningful spiritual relationships. It's a buzz. They don't know what it is. So, if I presented a seminar using this kind of an approach and someone asked a question like this, that would be like, I'd be in ecstasy. They got the message. At least they got the, they're in the ballpark. They may not be able to, because look at us, look at the rigors that we're undergoing, and you know, how do I avoid intellectualizing? But these people, that's high if they can do that. That's spiritual for them. A little bit higher than just gross sensual as they get in a series of mental adjustments. That's spiritual. A spiritual person. I'll give one example. when we it struck me like a bag of bricks falling on my head or something. we were chanting at Union Square Park about 3 weeks, or two and a half weeks after the September 11th thing happened. And there was a peace rally going on. And one of the signs that someone was carrying was, an eye for an eye will make everyone blind. An eye for an eye is a saying from the Bible. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's an Old Testament saying. You heard that before? Some of you have, some of you haven't. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's a statement of karma. If you do something, it will come back. And so some people take it, you hit me, I hit back. So if someone puts out your eye, then you put out another person's eye. Some people take it that way. So the sign is saying, an eye for an eye will make the world blind. And then another person right next to them was saying, so they're taking the Bible and saying, dump it. They don't know what the meaning is, just dump it. Then, and that's a peace rally. God, dump them. And then another one was, something that two other anomalies, forget exactly what it was, something about do not retaliate, global justice. So from our understanding of the laws of Manu, and you know, if someone, there are five aggressors, that not only there's no penalty if they're killed, but it's actually good for the person if they're killed. How are you going to get global justice if there's not some punishment for wrongdoers? Global justice with no punishment. It doesn't make any sense. But that's spiritual. And there's others, but no sense. So it's our duty, along with practicing Krishna consciousness and becoming transcendentally attached to Krishna, and not just intellectualizing these teachings, but internalizing and becoming nice devotees that live our lives according to these teachings. But we have to give that understanding to other people, and that's not easy. And I guess you have one saving grace. You really can't do that so much here in Singapore, because you'll be in trouble if you do it, especially these times. But you should be preparing yourselves to do that. Because that's part of the purpose of creation. It's part of satisfying the Supreme Lord. You may not be Brahma, but you're part of Brahma Sampradaya, and it's part of what your duty to Krishna is. It's something that Krishna wants. And it needs to be presented in such a way people will actually accept it. That's a challenge. But we have our verse here telling us how to experience the highest perfectional ingenuity, and that is that we have to become Krishna conscious, and then we can give that Krishna consciousness to others. I think I'm going to end this way. Srila Prabhupada ki.